This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
We're inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio today. Jody Beznoska is with us from Walton Arts Center. Hello,
yes.
Jody. And a special guest, Bill Perry, who is from the cast of Memphis. Welcome.
Glad to be here.
Jody?
Yes.
We usually go over what's coming up.
Should we do that quickly?
Let's do that
so
quickly.
So we can get to the stuff that's really important.
Well.
Sure. Well, we have Memphis, of course, which is here in town, and I'm sure we'll talk at length about that in the next couple of minutes. But Theater Squared begins their third show of the season next week. I believe their preview night is the 14th, and they open on the 15th. And this is Sons of the Prophet. It runs for 3 weeks.
Yes.
Maybe 3 or 4 weeks. And I understand there was a great Playwrights Forum.
Stephen Karam, the playwright, was here, Pulitzer finalist for this script, and is maybe all of 33 years old.
Oh,
and
wow.
It was just a great standing room only event over across the street at the library.
That'll
be on our show next week.
Yeah, the play is funny. It's a comedy, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so that is next week for Theater Squared. That'll be in the Nadine Baum Studios. And then that same weekend, it's going to be a busy weekend. Wow. We will have Potted Potter, the unauthorized Harry Potter experience, happening. Four shows of that on the 16th and the 17th. Those tickets are not surprisingly, those are going really well. So get those now if you don't want to miss out on that. At the same time, we'll have the Grace Kelly Quintet playing in the Star Theater. And, of course, Grace Kelly is the sort of wonder kid, young saxophonist who has just been tearing it up and winning all kinds of awards. And she'll have her group. She'll have two shows in the Star Theater at 7 and 9 o'clock. And then on the 19th, we will have The Little Prince, a wonderful show for kids. I learned something really neat about the story of The Little Prince. The person who wrote it, the man who wrote it, his plane crashed. And then that was the inspiration, or he started to write the story based on that. So I think that's pretty neat.
He was a French aviator.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great story.
I just learned that. I thought that was fascinating. It was really cool. And then we'll have Hair, February 22nd through the 23rd. I think that's only three performances of that, and that is the new touring version of the revival that was on Broadway a couple years ago. And then let's just look ahead real quick. Since we're in Broadway mode, we'll look ahead to Anything Goes in April from the 9th through the 14th. And then way ahead into May, you really want to get this on your calendar. And I'm thinking about it because one of the producers of Memphis was also a producer of this show, War Horse, which is going to be here in May. And it's sort of we're all just giggling. We're so excited that show's coming. So that was the quick rundown, but now let's talk about Memphis.
Memphis, six more shows during this run, beginning tonight.
Yeah.
Bill Perry is with us, and you are the radio station owner.
Yes.
And you have this sort of unique role because you represent the old guard, maybe even the wrong side of history with your character somewhat. You're not a villain, but you are the staid character. You could play cartoonish, but you don't at all. Play it with humanity.
Good. I'm glad it doesn't come across that way. But he's sort of the grumpy old white guy. But there are people in the show. There are the white faction in the show that represents the group of people in Memphis, Tennessee that are throwing the N-word around a lot. And my character isn't that guy. He's kind of trying to find his way through the changes that he can see coming. But, I mean, he's a bit resistant to them. He doesn't know how to fold them in, but
but he's the first one to give Huey his break, right?
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. He does give him a job.
He realizes commerce is at work here.
That's the whole ticket, really. And it was interesting because it's loosely based on this DJ that was in Memphis, Dewey Phillips.
Mm-hmm.
And a similar thing happened to him. And it's loosely based on that part of his life, not the romantic part of his life. But he was selling records in a W.T. Grants, which was like a five and dime at that time. And he just couldn't get arrested. He couldn't get a job anywhere else. Really wanted to be on radio. And he would play these records, and he had this patter that everyone loved. He talked faster than anyone on earth. And one of the radio station owners came down one night. They all knew him because they would bring records down every now and then and have him play them to sell them. And he said, Dewey, why don't you stop by the station? And I'll show you around, kind of throwing him a bone. So he did. He brought a couple of records with him. And the guy, it's a radio station at night. There's three people there. And he takes him into the booth. He shows him how it's working. He says, this is the on-off switch. This is how you go on the air. This is the volume and stuff. So literally, Dewey Phillips walks out into the lobby, sits there for a minute, lights a fire in the trash can. The smoke starts billowing up. And he waits. And the people come running. And he just kind of sneaked into the booth, locked himself in, went on the air. And that's mirrored in our show.
Oh, my gosh.
You see that toward the beginning of our show, the feeling of that. And people started calling in. And some of them were kind of outraged at the kind of music he was playing on mainstream on radio. But a lot of people were calling in, particularly young people, that really were excited about what they heard.
Yeah.
The guy gave him a little spot on the air, and within a year, he was the number one DJ in Memphis, Tennessee.
That's
and
just
he
like
was
the show.
One of about three DJs in the country in the very early 50s, like 49 to 52, that helped bring what became sort of rock and roll, but more than that, what was rhythm and blues music, came up into the middle of the dial, broadcasting, having radius of 50, 60, 100, 200 miles.
Right.
End of the dial, you could maybe reach 1 mile, mile and a half. And that's where all the black stations were at that time. So, and Commerce did it, you're right, because the advertisers realized, well, we can, you know, we can make money here. People are listening. They're going to actually listen to this music. So made a huge difference. He didn't set out. He didn't do it for that reason. He did it because he loved that music, and he was who he was.
Yeah.
But really great things came from what he started.
Yeah. And Memphis became this hub of white artists and black artists sharing music.
That's for sure. That's for sure.
Well, my question has less to do about the show and more to do about what it's like being on the show. I've never had the opportunity to speak with somebody that's on that's part of a touring production. So I heard that you've been on the road for a year and a half.
That's just about right.
Yeah. What is it like to be on the road? Do you know where you are yet?
I've been in this business a long time. I'm 65. I started when I was 24. I've only been on two other tours. And those tours, we would go into cities and stay for a month, sometimes 2 or 3 months. So this is a very new experience for me, going week to week. The downside of it is rolling into another city on a Monday, unpacking in your hotel, kind of sitting on the edge of the bed for a minute and saying, yeah, you get kind of a Peggy Lee thing, you know? Is that all there is? But that really is the worst of it. And the best of it is there are a lot of pluses. And one of them is this cast. It is a great group of people. I'm not saying that just because I'm sitting here. It's a wonderful group of people to travel with and work with. And the other part is telling the story. It's a story worthwhile. I mean, I know that audiences are moved by it.
Mm-hmm.
We've had really great reaction around the country. And the third thing is, It is great fun to go to different cities. And I do enjoy that. I enjoy that a lot. I enjoy getting out and kind of trying to, I don't do it in every city, but I would say 8 out of 10 really trying to see what there is to see, meeting people that live there. And it's been great.
You know, you look at your resume and 4 original Sondheim casts, the original Jesus Christ Superstar, you're on record. You sing, you dance. In this play, you don't get to until the end. I don't know if this happens every night, but the Encore Tuesday night, you're up there and it's kind of the roll call. All of a sudden, you just start bust a move and you're having this great fun. Is it somewhat frustrating to be a song and dance man who does?
Well, I'm not really a song and dance man. I have sung a lot in my life. I've been in a lot of musicals. I can move. I can move to rhythm. Not a dancer. And yes, I do kind of bust it out there at the end of the curtain call. I think if that went on for another 30 seconds, I'd probably collapse. But it's great fun. We were opened in Memphis, Tennessee, and we were there for a couple of weeks. We were into the second week of our, you know, of doing the shows. And I was standing there one night next to Will Mann, who plays Bobby in the show, big man, about 6'2", you know, big guy. He's standing there, and he's a black man, and I'm this white guy, and you know, we've had this whole racial thing throughout the whole show. And he was doing something about pointing to the audience or something, and I kind of mimicked him, like, what are you doing? And he looked at me, and we just started dancing together. And I thought, this is kind of fun. This is going to be, he's one of my good pals in the show.
Well, you mentioned that you've been in the business for a long time, but how has the business changed over the years?
It's a long answer, but the short of it is that a large part of it has come to do with the way shows are put together, how much money it takes to produce a show, to produce a musical, a new musical, average new musical between, I would think I'm right in saying between 12 and 15, 12 and $16 million, which means that you have to get a pretty good sizable conglomerate of people producing a show. When I came into the business, if you opened a program for a Broadway show, above the title, there are always the producers. There were maybe three names, two or three names. Now there are six, seven, eight, ten names. It does take a village. Mm-hmm. It isn't necessarily a good thing, only in that the artistic focus of how a show is created can get diffused.
You have more interests to please and more
exactly.
people that need to make a profit.
And when that happens, the danger is that things just get watered down. Stories get watered down. The intensity of a piece. The piece that a writer and a composer that they had in their soul that they were writing originally, it might not end up being on that page, on that stage when opening night comes, because there have been so many forces sort of pulling at it, saying, well, what about this? I'm not sure that I think this works. You know, I mean, we need to reshape this. I've got my people. They're not happy about, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So that has made a real difference in what the entertainment becomes, and there's a difference between that and what theater is, I think, sometimes and oftentimes. So that's a big, broad brushstroke answer, but that's part
yes, it's a big question.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, finally, one last question. One of my favorite things that I ever heard on Prairie Home Companion was 6-Minute Hamlet. And imagine my surprise when I found out that you were part of that.
You know, so many people have loved that. I've got a friend, the husband of an old friend of mine, and who was he's a retired professor at Bethany College in West Virginia. But he called me once, and he said, I can't believe I turned this on, and there you were. That was the thing he was most excited about that I've ever done. That it was so much fun being on Prairie Home Companion. What a trip. That man writes that show every week. He writes almost every word that's spoken on that show.
Almost. And they do, what, 35, 40 new shows a year?
Yes.
It's incredible.
Yes, and he does a 20-minute monologue with no notes. No notes. Every week, a new monologue for 9 months of the year. That in and of itself is pretty extraordinary. No, it was great. We had a great time.
Well, you'll have a great time at Memphis. It's tonight. This is Thursday?
This
then
is
Friday night, two shows Saturday, two shows Sunday.
Correct,
right,
yes.
Right.
Where can people find out more, Jody?
WaltonArtsCenter.org for tickets or 443-5600, or you can come down and visit us at the box office. The lobby is decked out, and we do have a gallery exhibition in the Joy Pratt Markham Gallery, which is free and open to the public. Parking is free before 2 p.m., so if you want to come down and get your tickets, go for it.
Jody, thank you. Bill?
Great. A pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Some people say I'm just a fool, a man with nothing to show. They say I got the charm of a mule, but there's something